Insightful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
The Taliban reached the Afghan capital, Kabul, as the government says a peaceful transfer of power will take place. Afghanistan's President Ashraf Ghani has left the country for Tajikistan. And Russia says it is working with other countries to hold an emergency UN Security Council meeting on Afghanistan. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, definitely, most of the news is about Afghanistan this hour, where the Taliban have reached the Afghan capital, Kabul, racing closer to a complete military takeover of the country. A Taliban spokesman says the group's forces have been ordered to enter Kabul. Zabihullah Mujahid says the move is aimed at preventing looting after local police deserted their posts. Earlier, the Taliban said they expect a peaceful transition of power during the next few days. The Afghan acting interior minister also said there would be a peaceful transfer of power to a transitional government.
The security of the city has been guaranteed. There will be no attack on the city. The big city and the power will be handed over to a temporary third party, and it is our duty to secure the city.
Meanwhile, President Ashraf Ghani has left Afghanistan. An interior ministry official says he has left for Tajikistan, but a foreign ministry official says his destination is unknown. Ghani's office has said it cannot say anything about his movement for security reasons. Now, the Taliban began their offensive in Afghanistan in May. They stepped up operations over the past week, taking key cities one after another. Jalalabad and Mazar-e-Sharif are the latest major cities to fall to the militants. Well, Russia says it is working with other countries to hold an emergency UN Security Council meeting on Afghanistan. A Russian foreign ministry official said Moscow was not planning to evacuate its embassy in the Afghan capital. He said the Taliban have assured Russia and other countries that their diplomatic missions and staff would be safe. Russia says it does not yet recognize Taliban militants as Afghanistan's new lawful authority. In the U.S., the Secretary of State says American embassy staff members in Kabul are being moved to the city's airport. The U.K., Germany, and Canada are also flying out their diplomatic staff. Meanwhile, Pakistan has closed the Torkham crossing with neighboring Afghanistan. It was the last major border crossing out of Afghanistan to fall to the militants. Political commentator Jason Unruhy says Western countries, particularly the United States, are fleeing Afghanistan because they have never been welcomed by the Taliban.
The Taliban is sweeping in and is going to take power, and I don't think they're going to take too kindly to the countries that were occupying their country. I think they're fleeing because they know they're probably going to get hurt. You know, after 20 years of prolonged murder of the entire country with, a 1.5 million lives lost, that they're not going to be very happy about what has been going on, and they're probably going to essentially get rid of the Western foreign influence, mainly by I wouldn't put it past them to burn down the embassies or something like that, but I think the message from the Taliban is very clear that the Western powers, particularly the United States, are not welcome anymore. And I think the United States realizes that, as well as the other Western countries, and they're trying to get everything out of there. I mean, embassies often carry very sensitive documents. They're going to want to get rid of those, get them out of the country as quickly as possible before the Taliban comes into power.
Moving on to other news now this hour. Palestinians have held a rally in the Gaza Strip to mark the 20th anniversary of the martyrdom of Abu Ali Mustafa, the leader of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. Drubet Shapet brings us more in this report.
Palestinians took part in a rally in the Gaza Strip marking the 20th anniversary of the killing of Abu Ali Mustafa, the leader of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. Abu Ali Mustafa was assassinated in an Israeli attack in Ramallah in 2001. Palestinians said they participated in this rally to renew their support for the Palestinian resistance, expressing they will continue the road of resistance in defending their rights.
Today, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine is marking the 20th anniversary of the assassination of our leader, Abu Ali Mustafa. By holding this huge rally titled With Knowledge and Resistance, we will build the next generation of freedom and victory. We view the resistance as the only way out of the current crisis. We have many allies from Iran to Syria, Lebanon and Al-Quds, which stand against the Israeli regime.
This rally comes in conjunction with the Resistance Front warning it won't tolerate any more Israel's reluctance to meet Palestinians' demands, especially those related to ending the suffocating siege imposed on the Gaza Strip.
Today, all Palestinian resistance factions are marking Abu Ali Mustafa's assassination, vowing to follow in the footsteps of their leaders. Today, Palestinians are involved in a continuous struggle against Israel, especially in Al-Quds, defending their lands. We call for a unified stance in fight against the occupation.
Organizers said this event marks the ongoing resistance until the main goals of all Palestinians are achieved. Resistance factions renewed their pledge to defend the Palestinian people and sent a new warning to the Israeli regime that the coming generations are the generations of liberation.
We believe that generations after generations will keep resisting against Israeli occupation. The Israeli regime should be held accountable for its crimes, and the international community should break its silence towards them.
Palestinians here stress on not only support their resistance and follow the steps of the leaders, but also defend their rights with all means until liberating all Palestine. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
At least 28 people have been killed in northern Lebanon after a fuel tanker exploded, burning a crowd of people clamoring for gasoline in the crisis-hit country. Lebanon's Red Cross said the explosion in a northern region of Attar also injured 79 people. The health ministry said some of the victims will need treatment abroad due to the severity of their burns. Well, the tragedy took place early on Sunday as army personnel were handing out fuel from the container, which was confiscated from hoarders. A security source said a brawl erupted among the people jostling for fuel, leading to gunfire that hit the tank. Now, the incident heaps pressure on hospitals, which have already been crippled by fuel shortages and long power cuts. And, of course, we're following very closely the situation in Afghanistan. More breaking news that Taliban spokesman is saying that the Afghan police officials have fled Kabul, presenting a law and order issue. As I said earlier, the Taliban, which at first said they were going to be on the outskirts of Kabul until talks were finished and a transition of power. However, because of the vacuum of power inside of the city, the Taliban said that they are moving in order to make sure that security is enhanced and continued. Bringing you the latest on everything that's happening in, of course, Afghanistan as we get it in. Meanwhile, Lebanon's central bank says it is ready to use its mandatory reserves to keep the fuel subsidy scheme running, but only if Parliament passes the relevant legislation. Earlier, we discussed this issue in our news review program. Let's take a listen.
Lebanon's central bank governor says the bank is ready to tap into the country's mandatory reserves to keep subsidizing fuel. Riyad Salami, however, insists that this can only be done if relevant legislation is passed by Parliament. On Wednesday, the bank announced the decision to stop providing subsidies for fuel imports, saying that it does not have the constitutional permission to continue the scheme. That drew sharp criticism from the government. Beirut insists that the subsidy scheme must continue and fuel prices remain the same. Concern over soaring prices has sent people to fill up their cars in a panic. To discuss that further, we're joined by our correspondent in Beirut, Mariam Saleh, and also Mohammed Faour, economist and a member of the Lebanese Party Citizens in a State out of Dublin. Now, thank you very much to both of you for joining us on this edition of the News Review. Let's begin with Mariam. If you could please tell us more about the different aspects of this whole issue. On the one hand, we have the governor of the central bank claiming that he does not have the legal authority to tap into the reserves that he needs. On the other hand, we have the government that is insisting that he should. So who's right and who's wrong? Is legislation needed or not?
Well, there is definitely a very huge debate here in Lebanon. It's a controversial issue right now on whether there needs to be subsidies that continue or that subsidies should be lifted. There is agreement generally that they want to lift the subsidies in order to fund the citizens directly, especially those who are under the poverty line. However, they did not agree that these subsidies, especially on the fuel, should end now. And that was considered a unilateral decision made by head of the central bank, Sajad Salemi, and this is why this caused a lot of anger, not only among the people, but also among the political leaders themselves. Many are even economic analysts or political analysts are stressing that this proves the extent of power that Salemi has in the economic policies of the country, and the fact that he can do something that great and take such a decision, which is very decisive in this country, especially at this juncture of time when Lebanon is in a huge economic crisis and the need for fuel is very high and the shortage is also very obvious right now. So this is why this caused a lot of anger among the political leaders. They're calling on him to stop this. We're even seeing a lot of accusations against Riyad Salemi, saying that his economic policies have led to this issue. We're hearing this especially from President Michel Aoun, the group that also supports him, the Free Patriotic Movement. We saw refusals. We heard refusals from many of the parliamentary blocs, especially Hezbollah's bloc, that stressed that there needs to be continuous subsidies given, especially to fuel, because, as you know, we are in an electricity crisis, and that is, of course, exacerbating. That is on one hand. You also have the issues related to corruption, because one of the main conditions for the next cabinet is that there has to be forensic auditing, and that would probably target Riyad Salemi, who also has lawsuits filed against him, not only in Lebanon, but also in Switzerland and France and other countries. So some are saying that this is probably one of his ways to use a scapegoat in order not to reach a state where we have a cabinet and that can be used against him.
So, Mr. Faour from Dublin, if you could please elaborate more on the legal aspects of this. Does the governor of the central bank actually need some kind of legal authority or a change in the laws in order to tap into the reserves that he needs to continue those subsidies?
Okay, I think the problem is not really a legal one. It's more of a political one. The governor of the central bank did reduce, at some point a couple of weeks ago, did reduce the mandatory reserve requirement from 15% to 14% in order to free up around $1 billion to finance imports. That's not the problem. And it's problematic to reduce this problem to whether or not to subsidize. We've been living through a deep financial crisis for over 2 years, close to 2 years now. This financial crisis has not been the result of bad policies. It has been the result of policy inaction, of doing absolutely nothing to tackle this crisis, other than attempting to buy time and buy time and buy time. And this debate on whether to subsidize or not, and this subsidy policy in general, is only in the context of buying time until the inevitable happens, because at the end of the day, the resources are limited. Allegedly, $14 billion of mandatory reserves are left. Even that is not credibly verified, but let's take it on face value and assume that it is $14 billion. these reserves are ever so dwindling as time passes by, and awaiting for what exactly? For absolutely nothing. There is no financial plan. There is no economic vision whatsoever. We've been living in a vacuum a governmental vacuum for over a year. Not that the previous government was able to do anything. Clearly, they were not capable of doing anything aside from proposing a certain financial plan that did not pass through the parliament. So the key issue here is policy in action, and subsidies are only existing in as far as facilitating policy in action.
Thank you very much. Interesting point. Mohammed Fowler, economist and member of the Lebanese Party Citizens Nasaid, and our very own correspondent in Beirut, Maram Saleh, joining us live. Thank you for your comments.
And with that, it brings us to the end of this World News edition. Thank you all so much for being with us.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
In the limelight. Top federal intelligence agencies failed to adequately warn law enforcement officials before the 6th of January riot that pro-Trump extremists were threatening violence, including plans to storm the Capitol, infiltrate its tunnel system, and bring guns, according to a new report by two Senate committees that outlines large-scale failures that contributed to the deadly assault. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists Luke Broadwater and Nicholas Fandos. The piece is titled Senate Report Details Security Failures in 6th of January Capitol Riot. Top federal intelligence agencies failed to adequately warn law enforcement officials before the January 6th riot that pro-Trump extremists were threatening violence, including plans to storm the Capitol, infiltrate its tunnel system, and bring guns, according to a new report by two Senate committees that outlines large-scale failures that contributed to the deadly assault. The 127-page joint report is the most comprehensive and detailed account to date on the intelligence, communications, and policing failures around the Capitol riot. An FBI memo on 5th of January warning of people traveling to Washington for war at the Capitol never made its way to top law enforcement officials. The Capitol Police failed to widely circulate information its own intelligence unit had collected as early as mid-December about the threat of violence on 6th of January, including a report that said right-wing extremist groups and supporters of President Donald J. Trump had been posting online and in far-right chat groups about gathering at the Capitol, armed with weapons, to pressure lawmakers to overturn his election loss. If they don't show up, we enter the Capitol as the Third Continental Congress and certify the Trump electors, one post said. Bring guns, it's now or never, said another. The first congressional report on the Capitol riot is the most comprehensive and detailed account to date of the dozens of intelligence failures, miscommunications, and security lapses that led to what the bipartisan team of senators that assembled it concluded was an unprecedented attack on American democracy and the most significant assault on the Capitol in more than 200 years. The failure to adequately assess the threat of violence on that day contributed significantly to the breach of the Capitol, said Senator Gary Peters, Democrat of Michigan and the chairman of the Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee. Senator Gary Peters added, the attack was quite frankly planned in plain sight. The 127-page joint report, a product of more than 3 months of hearings and interviews and reviews of thousands of pages of documents, presents a damning portrait of the preparations and response at multiple levels. Law enforcement officials did not take seriously threats of violence, it found, and a dysfunctional police force at the Capitol lacked the capacity to respond effectively when those threats materialized. The failures are obvious, said Senator Amy Klobuchar, Democrat of Minnesota and the chairwoman of the Rules and Administration Committee. To me, it was all summed up by one of the officers who was heard on the radio that day asking a tragically simple question, does anybody have a plan? Sadly, no one did. In response to the report, the Capitol Police said in a statement that its leaders agreed that the force needed improvement, including changing the way it collects and shares intelligence. But it insisted that law enforcement officials had no way of knowing that a pro-Trump rally would turn into a mass assault. Before 6th of January, the Capitol Police leadership knew Congress and the Capitol grounds were to be focus of a large demonstration, attracting various groups, including some encouraging violence. The statement said. But it added, neither the USCP nor the FBI, US Secret Service, Metropolitan Police, or other law enforcement partners knew thousands of rioters were planning to attack the US Capitol. The known intelligence simply didn't support that conclusion. Yet the Senate investigation found that the department had ample warnings weeks earlier that violent extremists, including members of Proud Boys and Oath Keepers, were planning such action and failed to share it widely or incorporate the warnings into its operational plan for 6th of January. Several comments promote confronting members of Congress and carrying firearms during the protest, a Capitol Police intelligence analyst wrote in a threat report on 21st of December, which included a map of the Capitol complex that had been posted on the pro-Trump blog, thedonald.win. Among the posts cited in the threat report, bring guns, it's now or never, and we can't give them a choice, overwhelming armed numbers is our only chance. The Senate's investigative report is the product of a collaboration among Senator Gary Peters, Senator Amy Klobuchar, and the top Republicans on the two committees they lead, Senator Rob Portman of Ohio on the Homeland Security Committee, and Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri on the Rules Committee. It is limited by its bipartisan nature, given that Republicans have refused to ask questions about the riot that could turn up unflattering information about Donald Trump or members of their party, as they try to put its political implications behind them before the 2022 midterm elections. Though the report states flatly that Mr. Trump continued to assert that the election was stolen from him and promoted the Stop the Steal gathering in Washington before the riot, it does not chart his actions or motivations, state that his election claims were false, or explore the implications of a president and elected leaders in his party stoking outrage among millions of supporters. The inquiry does not describe the events of 6th of January as an insurrection, a term many Republicans had joined Democrats in embracing immediately after the attack. Aides involved in its drafting said they had refrained from trying to summarize or contextualize Donald Trump's false claims just before the riot took place. They opted instead to include the full text of his speech in an appendix. Many of the findings in the report were culled from public testimony from committee hearings, though five people sat for detailed interviews with the committee. Christopher C. Miller, who was the acting defense secretary at the time, Ryan D. McCarthy, the Army secretary, General James C. McConville, the Army chief of staff, Yogananda D. Pittman, the acting chief of the Capitol Police, and J. Brett Blanton, the architect of the Capitol. The committee staff solicited more than 50 statements from Capitol police officers that painted a vivid portrayal of the rioters, some of whom gave Nazi salutes and hurled racist slurs at them. One officer described being crushed by the mob. Another told the committee that she still suffered from chemical burns she experienced that day. About 140 law enforcement officers reported injuries from the riot. The bipartisan report also tied seven fatalities to the assault, including five protesters who died and three police officers who died in its aftermath, two from suicide. The document lays out profound problems with the Special Capitol Police Unit that handles civil disturbances, only a fraction of which was adequately trained to respond to a riot and which was poorly equipped. On 6th of January, its officers were not authorized to wear protective gear at the beginning of their shifts or to use their most powerful non-lethal weapons, such as grenade launchers and sting ball grenades, to push back crowds because they lacked the training to do so. Let's be honest, Capitol Police were put in an impossible situation, Senator Rob Portman said. Without adequate intelligence, training, and equipment, they did not have the tools to protect the Capitol. The committees recommended 20 improvements, like beefing up police training and equipment and forming a single intelligence bureau in the Capitol Police to better share information. Their suggestions followed from Lieutenant General Russell Honoré, a retired Army officer whom Speaker Nancy Pelosi of California chose to lead a House task force that recommended the hiring of more than 800 Capitol Police officers, the construction of mobile fencing around the complex, and changes to Capitol Police Board procedures to allow the agency's chief to quickly summon the National Guard in an emergency. Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri said he and Senator Amy Klobuchar would soon introduce legislation to grant the Capitol Police Chief power to unilaterally summon the National Guard in emergencies. He said they were also likely to assemble a spending bill to increase funding for the department and carry out other changes. There was much information the panel was unable to learn. The senators secured only limited cooperation from key agencies, including the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security, the Justice Department, and the House Sergeant at Arms. Other agencies failed to meet deadlines to hand over documents. The findings and their limitations are likely to fuel renewed calls for an independent commission, like the one created after the 11th of September 2001 attacks, populated by experts and armed with subpoena power to investigate what happened on that day and why. Senate Republicans blocked the creation of such a body late last month, arguing in part that it would duplicate the work already underway by the Senate committees and prosecutors at the Justice Department.
aperture.
Welcome back to Aperture. Over the past 50 years, the average global temperature has increased at the fastest rate in recorded history. Scientists agree that the Earth's rising temperatures are fueling longer and hotter heat waves, more frequent droughts, heavier rainfall, and more powerful hurricanes. The impacts of global warming are being felt across the globe. And it could speed up if we keep burning fossil fuels at our current pace. But it's not just global warming. Other forms of pollution are also destroying the Earth. Now, many experts agree that environmental, economic, and health consequences are likely to occur if current trends continue. Don't go away. Here's the rest of the documentary.
We are a family, the Earth itself, and the humans that live on this planet. We can have a positive or negative interaction with each other. If we do negative things, nature will respond negatively.
Unfortunately, when we collectively use more and produce more, we see this as welfare. Anywhere in the world, if the production of automobiles, cement, or electricity increases, officials of that country take pride in it. For instance, they say we've been able to boost steel production by 10%.
Our main priority now is to cap production.
They would never come and say that we've cut production because the Earth is sick, it has a problem, that this year we've cut our production, we've cut cement, we've cut steel in order to cause less harm to the Earth. We haven't yet reached that stage.
Today, we hardly consider the future in our decisions. I can frankly say that we never think about the future.
The planet you live on is your mother.
We failed to take into consideration the Earth's biological capacity, and this is the number one reason for the disaster we're now facing.
The polar bear, the ruler of the Arctic. There are 25,000 of them left in the world. They're on the verge of extinction. Animals need ice for hunting seals and other prey, but the Arctic is melting.
Our water resources are being destroyed. Natural ice caps, which are the main source of sweet drinking water for billions of people, are melting. These are issues that will powerfully affect the future of mankind.
Everyone here is praying for more rain, but is it already too late?
Lack of water will be the main problem for mankind in the future.
It certainly looks like a crisis after the worst drought in 80 years in the state of São Paulo. Reservoirs have reached rock bottom, and everyone's hoping the rainy season will bring a miracle.
With global warming, we're concerned about the future of the Earth's environment and worried about the continued life of human beings. We're concerned about environmental adversities that could happen to the Earth. For example, the rise of international waters, melting of polar ice caps, and extinction of many animal species.
Look, with the predicted temperature changes, all polar ice caps are melting. Why? Why is all this happening? Because the temperature is rising, and so Q, or heat energy, is increasing. The temperature on Earth is rising. When a place like Alaska and cold climate regions are going down, well, this temperature difference is being narrowed. What will happen if the temperature difference narrows? Distances are being narrowed. So that means depth is being added to. When it becomes deeper, it means we're moving into it.
Due to the destruction we're causing to the planet, polar ice caps will melt in no time and water levels will rise. Then you'll see how many cities will be totally inundated, and this will lead to great expense and loss for humans. How many refugees will we have? What amount of humanitarian aid would be required for those inundated countries and to accommodate their people?
I am thinking about all the suffering you have caused us.
It's obvious that at some level we abuse the Earth to make money, but then we have to spend it, and the spending will probably increase.
I am trapped in a nightmare. I am trapped in this nightmare. I hope I wake up soon. This catastrophe is more than I can bear, but I am a forgiving mother. I cannot stand that my children are vanishing.
The main discussion point here is, to what extent are we endangering the balance of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere?
This is the result of years of indifference toward the rise of fuel consumption by Earth's inhabitants, using fossil fuels and extracting amounts of carbon from the depths of the Earth and emitting it out into our atmosphere, with the oceans and water's low capacity in absorbing it.
Countries that produce oil and gas highly depend on oil revenues for their income. Well, if we discuss cutting emissions, that will mean reducing the production of fossil fuels, and that could somehow affect their income in the future.
We humans, for our own interests, have been indifferent toward the Earth by gradually increasing the use of heating devices for transportation, as in cars, or fossil fuels that are used in industries, petrochemical refineries, powerhouses, and household fuels, and so on.
این محصول بی‌توجهی ما به حال زمین بوده.
We all breathe the same air. There may be less pollution in one place and more in another, but its effect on the environment can be hazardous for us all.
برای همه ما میتونه زیانبار و زیانبخش
باشه. Used to be so good, but my children started to forget about me. They started to only think about themselves and forgot about their mother. I don't quite understand why greed has taken such a hold on you. My children have brought disorder to this world.
We will see many people lose their habitats due to rising seawater levels in the future.
Consider the chain of islands that make up the Maldives.
which are only 1.2 meters above sea level at most. The country will lose a large portion of its land with the minutest rise in open water levels. Residential areas will be destroyed.
Many people will be unable to continue living in their own countries due to the drought and lack of water.
You pointed out to wars being fought in the future over water. Unfortunately, I have to say that these wars have already started. The future is now. Since entering the 21st century, even in our own western region, there have been serious challenges over water resources. So discussions about war and the competition for having access to water resources have already begun. It may not be that serious now, but be aware of its complications.
A large number of people will have to be relocated because their cities will become uninhabitable.
These people will migrate to places across the world, but these other areas do not have a high capacity either. It will be one of mankind's major problems in the future.
What does it all mean? It will mean high expenses for human living, something we never thought about. We never thought that a big city could ever become uninhabitable, a city with millions of residents, but it's happening.
The people I see, these are people, Paula, let me explain, who are people with limited resources. These are people who did not have the wherewithal to get out of town. They didn't have cars. There's no way they could pay for a hotel room. They stayed in their houses because they had to. And then the water came up, and I'm sure there were elderly here, there were infirm here. It's just horrific.
پیش‌بینی میشه که طی 15 سال آینده بر اساس بهترین برآوردهای
Based on UN estimations, it's predicted that within the next 15 years at most, between 80 and 90 million people will be displaced from small countries that are made up of chains of islands due to global warming and climate change. Then we won't be dealing with migrants and asylum seekers displaced by war and conflict. We will have migrants fleeing environmental disasters as well. So we need to make people around the world more aware of this eventuation and find a solution for it.
If I make a mistake here and go to jail, my kids and family will live the effects. I've done something wrong, but my child will feel its effects. If I make a mistake as a member of the global community, that mistake affects the whole. One multiplied by 1,000. One is a small figure. One is a small figure, but it's multiplied by 1,000. What does it equal? It equals 1,000. You have an index called M for mistake, which is a huge figure collectively. It's the mass of the entire planet. It's not at all a small figure. Now, even if you have an extremely small figure, you're multiplying it by a very large number. 1 multiplied by 1,000 equals 1,000. The 1 turned into 1,000. 2 multiplied by 1,000 equals 2,000. 3 multiplied by 1,000 equals 3,000. 0.5 multiplied by 1,000 equals 500. So we should be aware of what we're doing.
Thank you.
The Earth is also making all efforts to somehow balance all the noise and demands we're imposing on it. However, our power, mankind's destructive power, is now seemingly taking the upper hand over the Earth's ability to regenerate itself.
Anyways, we should know that if the doors to the future open in this way, it will lead to a grave crisis.
Children, the economic factor is not a sustainable argument. I think about climate change and this disaster.
The components of social welfare need to be changed. The developing world should no longer be using the same criteria the developed world has defined as welfare for its people and follow their footsteps.
If we take an overall look, I think any project, any move, any industrialization, any process or any technology should calculate the temperature rise on the Earth in proportion with the delta T quotient. Finally, humans can go on living for a week or two without food and a few days without water, but without air. We can't but survive for a minute. It is the most vital of anything the Earth's atmosphere has provided us with. We're using it, but on the other hand, we're destroying it, badly, and with high cost. We place it into a poorly manufactured man-made combustion device and receive toxic chemicals on the other side, which remains. It remains and moves around, and the Earth has no way to get rid of some of these toxic chemicals we've produced.
The economy has limited all activities to itself, and those who speak about the impact on the environment and the earth just talk and hold summits, but practically it's almost useless.
Concern. Just concern. What does that mean? What does being concerned mean? Static concern is meaningless. Concern should be dynamic. If you're concerned, you should do something to reduce that concern. That's a dynamic solution, not a static one. A static solution just adds to your concern and accumulates and is useless. Concern must be dynamic. What does dynamic mean? It means you must seek a real solution for it. It means you need to have a program.
I believe that if we carry on like this, making the Earth sick and failing to do anything about this sickness, we'll be deeply ashamed in front of our next generations. They've had no role in bringing about this situation, yet they have to bear the consequences. Consequences that are getting worse by the day. So I can't do anything but apologize to the next generation who might be watching this film for the disasters that my generation is causing the environment and the earth.
I don't understand why my children are destroying the one and only home that they have. As my children, they have closed their eyes to the facts. Don't use your planet in the wrong way. We are a part of you, not separated from you.
The Earth has been stable and balanced due to its ecosystem. It carried on with its life way before we ever came along and started hurting and destroying it. Finally, just like a pendulum will do, if you place it out of balance, it will try to balance itself, reach its lowest energy level, and become balanced.
The Earth is our mother. It's beautiful, it's a creator, it's merciful, and we in return are being very bad children.
Well, it's perfectly true that every single one of us citizens of the Earth must do our share to reduce pollution. But to curb global warming and avoid its dire consequences, the countries most responsible must make an effort. The U.S. has caused more global warming than any other country. Research shows that from 1850 to the year 2011, the United States, a single country, produced 27% of the total carbon dioxide emissions of the world. No other single country was even close. Indeed, the U.S. even outdistanced all the nations of the European Union combined. Well, that's a wrap for this week, but join me again next week here on Aperture. Goodbye for now.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.